This is the Talk About Wellness podcast with your hosts and Everside Wellness practitioners. My name is Courtney Handelin.
And I'm Tasha Schultz.
Tasha, other than a fun play on words, why tacos?
Well, just like a good taco has many different toppings, so does each person's path to wellness.
That's right. And both tacos and wellness are customizable for each individual and with each season. And it's totally okay if it doesn't look the same as the next person's taco.
Because it shouldn't.
That's right.
So we are excited to share our wellness knowledge and stories and tips with you in a fun, educational way.
So let's taco about wellness. Welcome back to the Taco About Wellness podcast. This is episode number 37, and we are wrapping up our webinar series with this little nice little podcast episode to tie everything up in a bow. Balancing the Weight for a Healthier You was a webinar series that we did in January and February of this year, 2023. It was a four-part series filled with educational and research-backed tips for balancing life, maintaining weight, and really just things to help individuals feel and be their healthiest selves. So this series did include, you know, some basics around weight loss, nutrition, goal setting, exercise, and also a lot of good tips for how to work through common barriers, both related to weight loss and weight maintenance. And so, like I said, in this podcast episode, we're going to take a little bit deeper dive with the series presenters. We're going to talk about, or I should say, taco about their personal experiences and some of their favorite tips and tricks, like I said, both personally and then experience working through coaching clients. So I am also excited to say that I have Tasha with me today.
Hi, everyone.
And
happy to be back.
Yes, we're so happy to have you back. And then ladies, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Sarah Wiseman. I am the chronic condition manager for the city of Dayton, and I also do registered dietitian work for Everside Corporate. So I'm excited to be here today.
I'm Monica McCorkle. I'm director of health coaching and nutrition services for Everside Health.
I'm Lauren Redman. I am a health wellness specialist for corporate. I have also been a dedicated health coach for the city of Augusta, so I'm excited to kind of be able to use both roles in this presentation.
Yeah, I'm Emily Fenton. I am the dedicated health coach for Watlow that is based in St. Louis, Missouri. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you all for being here. Okay, and before we dive into, I did want to give the disclaimer that this podcast is provided for educational and informational purposes only and does not constitute providing medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And Everside advises that you always seek the advice of your doctor or other qualified health provider regarding medical conditions. Keep in mind that we are speaking really in general terms here, and each individual is, of course, different. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something that was stated on this podcast. Neither Everside Health nor its employees nor any contributors to this podcast makes any representation, expressed or implied, with respect to the information provided herein or to its use. So with that being said, Tasha, do you want to kick us off?
I would love to. Thanks for having me back, Courtney. Welcome everyone who is listening. We hope that you get something out of our podcast today and that you enjoy this this episode series. So I guess my first questions are, I'll direct them to Sarah Wiseman. And if you could talk maybe a little bit about shifting our habits and tell us what are some skills for success that you recommend. Anything from like trying to exercise at a different time, tracking for calorie, you know, management and nutrient intake. Let us know, you know, kind of like talk us through that and what your tips are.
Yeah. Thanks, Tasha. I think one of the big things I think a lot of people try to start out with is feeling like they have to fit into a specific mold. Just because somebody else does something one way, they have to try to do it that same way. Maybe it's waking up at 4 a.m. to go work out and make sure you get your workout in before work. And I know I've had a patient that thought they had to do this when they were trying to manage their diabetes. And we talked and discussed and was like, oh, maybe you can get some extra sleep in and make sure you're getting enough sleep. And then also just work out after you're done with work and make sure you have workout clothes to take with you for that workout. And they did really well with that. They were very excited. Like, I don't have to lose sleep just to make sure I get my workout in. So you don't have to fit a specific mold. Learning to take the recommendations and adapt them to your life versus trying to fit and make your life adapt around what you're supposed to supposedly do.
I really appreciate that. I think it sets to kind of the maybe like popular idea now of people are embracing their differences, right? So I think it's easier to hear that, but I know I do have people that come in and they struggle with like, can't you just tell me what to do? Or like, I just want this cookie cutter thing. I'm like, but we don't all fit in the same cookie cutter. So, is nice. Yeah. When you can make it just really personal to what works for your life and giving yourself grace for the days that that doesn't work. Cause our life, you know, is constantly evolving and changing.
Yeah. And we each have our own challenges and barriers and, you know, each learning to figure out and identify where your challenges are and that develop strategies for your different behavior modifications that are going to address your specific challenges. You know, some people it might work out better to work out in the morning just because that tends to be where they get a little bit of me time with everything else going on if they have like family and other responsibilities the rest of the day. So it's about finding what works for you.
And nutritionally, I know we mentioned like tracking, and we're going to talk more about that too, but I think, again, along with not feeling like there's a specific box or mold that you need to fit into, there's a lot of anxiety that I, you know, encounter from people around tracking, because I think it's something that they're going to be like locked into forever for the rest, you know, like a life sentence, and really, really not, right? Like, it's just, it's during like, what are the most challenging periods? Maybe it's around the holidays. We all tend to be habitual, you know, creatures. And so getting yourself into a good routine. And once you're in that good flow, you know, kind of like what groceries to buy, you know, what meals to prep. If you're eating generally the same things, you don't need to keep entering the same stuff, you know? So I use that and I promote it as a tool to get yourself into a good flow, you know, and then you can kind of back off and not have to track every single thing every single day. For some people, that's a much more attractive, attainable goal.
Yeah, a lot of tracking can help you. It can help you identify your own patterns and habits and things that some of your trouble areas, points in the day that tend to be problematic for you. Maybe points in the day where your portions tend to get out of whack. And it really is helpful to hold you accountable. But some people do get overwhelmed. I mean, starting out having to track every bite every day, it's going to be helpful, but maybe to make it less overwhelming, just tracking a specific part of the day that you know is going to be problematic. And just being able to kind of hone in and focus in on some of those maybe patterns of eating. Maybe you find you don't eat very much throughout the day, and then at night you tend to have a lot more. And I've had patients like that. They've realized I have a hard time at night, and they know that. But then when we look at the rest of the day and their patterns throughout the rest of the day, oh, I'm not eating much throughout the day. So then that's leading to this large amount that I'm trying to eat at night.
Yeah, that's kind of the glory of tracking, like you said, right? It gives us really good insight. I think too, I mean, like you said, making it like, it doesn't have to be all or nothing, or focusing on the, you know, spots where you struggle. I know I've had a lot of people find success with like, if you're in an office setting and someone's got that candy dish that you have the habit of like grabbing a, you know, one of those little bite-sized candies every time. I've had people find it really successful, even in the simplest form of tracking of like, just keep a tally every time you grab that little Snickers bite. And then, you know, when you go back to your desk and see, ooh, I've already done this 5 times today. Like, well, maybe I'll tuck this one and like save it. It can really be helpful. I also had someone, this was a couple of years ago, but she had said that like tracking was really frustrating, especially because she felt like she was eating a lot of the right things and she was making healthy choices, but she did notice through it, again, helped her be aware that she wasn't eating probably enough like fruits and vegetables. So instead of tracking everything, she just tracked of like, let me just make sure I'm getting like 3 cups of vegetables, 2 cups of fruit. And that's all she tracked. And that in itself was really motivating for her, because then if it's 2 o'clock and she's like, ooh, I haven't had, you know, really any fruit yet today, then she went and had, you know, grabbed an apple for a snack instead of the granola bar in the vending machine or in the like snack corner. So I think, you know, it can be used in a positive way like that too. Did anyone else have anything they wanted to throw out in the tracking thought?
There are a lot of different ways to track too. I mean, there are apps for tracking. There are scanners for tracking. There are, you know, just one of my favorite professors of nutrition, who's done a lot of research on people's behaviors and habits. He has he made himself a little square sheet that's about this big, but he tracked what foods he wanted in his diet every single day. So it was like omega-3 fatty acid, salmon, vegetables. So he would have a checklist for those things that he wanted to eat. The other thing about, you know, the evidence of tracking is that 30% of people who aren't even, they're not doing anything except for tracking, 30% of people who would track their foods will lose weight. So it's, you know, it's just encouraging that. And as a registered dietitian for over 35 years, I will tell you, it's probably my least favorite skill to do. So I understand, you know, being able to find and come up with the ways that are going to work the best for you. So individualize and don't feel that there's just one way to do it. There's so many different ways.
Yeah, I like that. That's a huge, makes a huge difference. And I think too, admitting that like there's probably very few people in the world that really enjoy the tediousness of it. I'm sure there are some people out there. You know, I actually, speaking of like tracking the things that you want to include in your diet, there is an app, the My Food Plate from the USDA. They have an app it is just like you pick your goals of like how many vegetables you want in a day and, you know, for each different food group, and you track it that way. So there are apps even for that style of tracking. That's actually a good segue into your part of the presentation, Monica, that was on kind of some nutrition basics. And so, of course, one of them, you know, the thing that we push a lot is talking about fruits and veggies and get in all your servings. What's the Peppa Pig song? My kids always love fruits and vegetables. Keep us alive. Always remember to eat your 5. It's been a while since I sang on the podcast. And actually, I've even seen recommendations, especially speaking towards women in the perimenopause, postmenopausal, getting like, can you shoot for 8 cups of vegetables a day? Which is, you know, 5 can be overwhelming. 3 cups of vegetables can be overwhelming. Can you talk a little bit to that, Monica, the servings and maybe some of your favorite tips to like get there? And then if you are there, like, how do you get further?
Wow. How do I get further? That's amazing. First of all, I want to talk about, I love the song, and it's kind of apropos. There was an article in the newspaper, CDC did a study, just this was in the paper yesterday. Yes, I do read the newspaper, and it is a paper, and it comes to my house.
we have one too. But, no judgment.
But we can, the CDC had looked at over, I have it here because I don't want to lie on how many people were in the study, but it was 18,386 children, and it was asking their parents how many fruits and vegetables they ate. 49% of those children had 0 servings of fruits or vegetables, 0 servings of fruits or vegetables. And then the average American woman gets about 1.5 servings of fruits and vegetables in a week. So in a day, I'm sorry, not in a week, but in a day. And so when we all of a sudden say we have to eat 8, it makes it super overwhelming, especially when 5 is overwhelming. So just really incremental. Let's see what tiny steps we can make. Okay, you're at 1.5. Can we get another half in? And really focusing in on having a fruit and vegetable at each meal. Yes, you can have a fruit or vegetable or, you know, at breakfast. You can even have a vegetable at breakfast. Also, one of our health coaches, and then one of the biggest barriers that we get is, oh, the cost of it is so expensive to eat those fresh fruits and vegetables. And I would almost have Emily answer this. She had a really great, she's doing a fruit and vegetable challenge right now. And I pulled this off of her fruit and vegetable challenge. So I'm just going to kind of read it for you because I thought that the tips were really great. So it was, you know, just number one, keep foods around fruits and vegetables that you like. You know, they should be what you like. The other tip is it's seasonal. Seasonal. Right now, strawberries are it in Florida. We won't get to our strawberry season here in California for another another 2 months. So really, you know, work on those seasonal vegetables. So ensure that you have enough at home. Don't let them go bad. That's what happens, isn't it? We put them in our refrigerator. A month later, we're looking and we have this whole fruit or vegetable and it's gone bad. So these are four tips. I'm going to just real quick. Citrus fruits, oranges, lemons, and limes. They can stay for a while. Now, I have this new lemon tree. It's not new. I've had it for 25 years. And this is the first year that I've had lemons on it. So I've kept it going. And but
that's a labor of love. Like,
I know. Don't pick them all at once. Pull them when you're ready. Don't let it go bad. You know, but citrus fruit can stay for a while. Zucchini vegetable is affordable, versatile. You know, it's something that it can be julienned. It can be shredded. It could be, you know, and the kids say, I don't want to see what it looks like. You can, you know, cook it up and then blenderize it and put it in your spaghetti sauce so that there's added vegetables in the foods and it's hidden. I mean, sometimes we have to do those sneaky things. The other thing, berries or frozen berries and cucumbers are some of the things that Emily brought up. And then, but just write down a list of those things that you love and always have them that you love. I found with cantaloupes and watermelon when they're in season, if I just bring and put them on the counter, I have to chop them up, get them ready so that they're in bite-sized pieces and I can pull them out. With children and with young children, children have taste buds, so many more taste buds than we do. So as adults, especially at my age, no, lots of taste buds that we have to, you know, with the children, we bring that food back. If they go black, you know, then bring that food back and have them try it again because their taste buds change and they taste over time. Another thing with children is an activity with children is, and I learned this in the hard way is that in working with young children is that you try the food first yourself. Never go blah when you taste something, you know, just always make it feel really enjoyable and fun and pulling that in. So those are some of mine.
Anybody else say to like, let your kids play with their food and like make it look fun. And I think like that actually works for adults too. I guess I'm not speaking off of a specific, I don't have a scientific article to like back this, but I know I read once of like, hey, this works for adults too. Like just if you look at your plate and it's colorful and pretty, you're more inclined to eat it. Whereas if it looks pretty drab, like if your cucumbers are boring. Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
Or add sauces to it. You could add, you know, have peanut butter or ranch dressing or whatever kind of sauces that you like. There are, and that reminded me that my plate has a kidsplate.com and the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics has also Kids Eat Well. I'll get that reference to you, but it's one where it's interactive. So mom and dad can go on with, you know, and have them time to play with their kids in nutrition and getting foods in.
Awesome. We'll link that in the show notes for sure. Okay. And I know there was a lot more that we covered too around like other tips for eating and just getting more fruits and vegetables in and how to make them more appealing and stuff. So what about food labels though? Because I know that this is a big thing and it can be really confusing for people. I mean, I always tell people like, make sure you're looking, if you're going to pay attention, then make sure you do look at the serving size because that could shift everything you're looking at. What are your favorite things to highlight on the food label or favorite tricks for helping people to understand them?
A couple of things that are, you know, not just serving size, but servings per container. So if the serving size is a half a cup and you have 8 cups per container, you have to multiply the total calories by 8. So instead of maybe 200 calories, it's going to be 1600 calories for the whole thing. And sometimes we eat the whole thing. You know, if it's there, right, we eat it. You know, that thing of Pringles that, you know, that people just start eating and eating, where you got to close the top and then, oh, how many did I eat? So total fat is something that I look at also, amount of saturated fat. The saturated fat is the stuff that clogs our artery walls. So the less is best. And then now the food labels as of 2018 have had to add on added sugar. So any additional sugar that is put into that food product, you're going to see how many grams of sugar that there are there. So it'll have total carbohydrate, and then it'll have total grams of sugar and then added sugar. So if the total carbohydrate is 46 grams and the added sugar is 46 grams, then everything in that food is added sugar. So being careful of looking at that. Total calories, that's, you know, you again, being careful of depending on where you are, total calories might be something to look at. But the other ones I really like, the added sugar, the total fats, the saturated fats, and then servings and how many servings are in that container, and really paying attention to that. I want to, the other thing about food, and I just, the number one thing about food, the number one reason why people eat food is they like it. Mm-hmm. Okay. That is the number one reason. And we really need to bring enjoyment back into our food and not, you know, I think almost a lot of American women can tell you all of the calories in almost everything that they eat. And I really feel that that causes a lot of stress, and that stress response is, it releases cortisol, and cortisol, what does it do? It, you know, it increases our fat stores and how much fat we store. So I think there's this cycle. We really need to love what we're eating and really make friends with the foods that we eat. So, label reading is great if you're, but don't punish yourself as you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, find enjoyment.
I'm glad you brought that in. I think, you know, it's so easy for us to get obsessive over those labels, and you're right. It's just a tool. If you're going to choose to eat it, then you should make time to enjoy it. You know, I think I heard someone say once that they, like, before they sit down for a meal, they just like take a couple deep breaths, just to like slow down and allow and know, like, it's okay. Like, I'm eating now and this is what we're doing. And it's, you know, just helps to make it a more enjoyable experience. And like you said, really honor that time you have with eating that food you enjoy, instead of just rushing through and then beating yourself up afterwards because you caved and you ate the darn Girl Scout cookies.
I mean, paying attention, mindful eating is a whole different, it's a whole, we could do a whole podcast on it.
Yeah.
And that most of us, so I'll leave you to this. Most of us, we get excited about eating. So we pay attention to that first bite that we eat, and we, you know, we kind of savor that first bite. And then all of a sudden we're looking down, there's that one bite left. What happened in between? You know, so really savoring each bite and paying attention to each bite and enjoying all those bites rather than the first and the last and then going, what happened?
Lauren, would you like to kind of walk us through what you recommend for physical activity, what might hold people back, and what you see as barriers, what you recommend for people to work through that?
Yeah, so we kind of talked about working through just whatever your excuses are. So we gave a whole bunch of examples in the actual presentation. So some of the big ones that I always hear as a health coach are, I don't have enough time. I don't have the means to exercise, as in I don't have a gym membership. So this kind of goes back to what Sarah was saying, don't put yourself in a box, right? So I tell people all the time, like, just because you don't have a gym membership or you can't afford a gym membership or there's not a gym in your area, doesn't mean you can't exercise. You just got to exercise a little different. So exercise at home. I have a gym membership and I still exercise at home 2 days a week just because of my schedule, right? So learning to kind of walk around those excuses. I get a lot of physical limitations, and people will use them as excuses to never exercise again. So I always use my personal example when I talk to people about that. Like, I had a C-section. It was an emergency C-section. Couldn't do anything for 6 weeks, right? After 6 weeks in a C-section, your body is totally not the same as it was before. And so you kind of have to learn to readjust. I had to pretty much start from ground zero and start over again. But people will use that as an excuse, any kind of surgery, any kind of recovery. They'll go, oh, I'm not allowed to ever do anything ever again for this specific body part because I had a surgery on it. I'm like, that's not actually true. We just have to modify what we're doing and work around those kind of things. And so I always tell people, figure out what your biggest barrier is and then try to figure out how to work around it. So like, if weather is your barrier because you really like to do things outdoors, have something you can do inside if the weather calls for that. So if it's raining, or if you live somewhere where it snows and it's like super cold outside and you don't like the cold, have something you can do inside that kind of mirrors whatever you were doing outside or gives you whatever you're looking for in your exercise. But again, don't put yourself in a box. Don't say like, I have to get on a treadmill 5 days a week at the gym to be exercising. That's not true. You can get physical activity kind of all over the place. And then as far as what we were referring to as exercise snacks, we're referring to, again, not putting yourself in that box and kind of breaking it up. A lot of people get stuck on the 30 minutes of exercise a day because that's the example we always give when we're looking at any kind of research. So I tell people it doesn't have to be 30 minutes at the same time, right? So if I only have 10 minutes to do something in the morning when I'm getting ready, do something for 10 minutes and then do another 10 minutes of stretching or walking in my workday, and then do another 10 minutes of something at night, right? So kind of figuring out where you can fit the exercise into your normal daily routine is very helpful for a lot of people. So people, as much as we sit, a lot of what we're doing when we're sitting, we can actually get up and do. So you may not necessarily be able to sit and type. Like, you can't move if you have to type at the computer, but if I'm on my phone, I can get up and pace while I'm on my phone. Or if I'm sitting watching TV, I can get up and walk during commercial breaks or in between episodes or whatever I'm doing. I can find time to make movement fit into my already like normal routine. So you don't have to go way outside of the box for physical activity, which helps a lot of people because, again, they get stuck in the rut of, I don't like to run, or I don't like to lift weights, or I don't like to do what people call structured exercise, and then they don't do anything. So I try to help people get past that and kind of think outside the box and fit their physical activity into their already busy lifestyle and figure out how it works best for them.
I just, sorry to jump on your toes, Tasha. This just like gets me so excited, this topic. I've seen the same. It's amazing too when you think of like how many barriers we have for just getting started, right? Like, I've read, I think it's called Atomic Habits, where he talks about like, reward yourself for putting your shoes on. Like, let that be your first goal, which seems kind of ridiculous. But I find, you know, a lot of people have success too when you say like, stop trying to say like you have to exercise for 30 minutes. You're exhausted at the end of the day. Like, but can you do 5 minutes or can you do 10 minutes? Like, then if you feel like doing more, great, keep going. If you don't, that's okay. You can be done. But that, yeah, the whole concept of exercise snacks, I think, is so great. And it makes people feel just better, like they can just accomplish it. If you're, you know, you add up all those things, then suddenly they're like, wow, I got 40 minutes of activity in today and I'm not done. You know, I think it's so great. And I think that really segues too into some of the, you know, ways that we can just like keep the momentum going, either maintaining or just continuing to move forward. Emily, you had a really good slide in your presentation. And so I would, of course, direct people to watch that again. But could you just give us a little recap of that slide that you had with the five tips for success?
Yeah, so the five skills for success, these are your, you know, what we call tools in your toolbox. And this comes from the National Weight Control Registry, which is a group of individuals who've lost a significant amount of weight. I believe it's 30 pounds or more, and they've kept it off for at least 5 years. And what this big research experiment, study, experiences, whatever you want to call it, showed was that these groups of individuals followed these five skills. They followed them a little bit differently, but all in all, they each individual, these were their skills for successfully losing weight and keeping it off. And the first one was what we've talked about, is those fruits and vegetables, making sure you get those five servings a day, or at least increasing and progressing how much you're getting already. So like we said earlier, like Monica said earlier, going from 0 to 5, 0 to 8 is going to be very overwhelming. Go from 0 to 1 or 0 to 2 to start with. The second skill for success is going to be looking at your portion control and portion sizes. Again, reading the food label, looking at those serving sizes, looking at those servings per container, and just making sure you're staying within the appropriate amount. The third skill for success is going to be that exercise, which is what we just talked about. For some people, it might be that 150 minutes a week. For some people, it's just trying to move their body for 10 minutes a day, depending how busy their schedule is. But we know the more we move, the better we feel, and the more successful we're going to have at losing weight, keeping it off, and decreasing our risk for other chronic conditions as well. The fourth skill for success is tracking, which again, we talked a lot about at the beginning here. And like we said, there's many different ways to track: tracking your food intake, tracking your exercise, tracking your mood and your feelings, and emotional eating. And then the fifth one is those skills in itself, and just the behavior change in itself, and really finding what works best for you as an individual. Because I know what works for me is totally different than what works for my husband, and is totally different than what works best for all of you as well.
Yeah. Awesome. That's good. Thank you for just kind of recapping that again. So I know, again, we could talk about this for hours of, everything, but there was a part that you had in your segment again about like strategies and tips for getting through things like holidays or parties, travel, eating out of restaurants, you know, special occasions. And so let's not read the whole thing on that, but is there a favorite tip that you like to share? And I don't know if anyone else has a favorite thing that they like to share or like personally do themselves to kind of get through all that.
I would say one word, really two words, is planning and enjoying.
Yes, I love
it. And I am one, like Monica says, I enjoy my food. I'm a self-proclaimed foodie. I love going out to eat, trying new foods, whether they're healthy or not. For me, but I always walk into those situations with a plan, whether it's I eat a nutrition, energizing breakfast, I get my fruits and vegetables before I go out to eat for dinner, I hydrate throughout the day, whatever that plan looks like, I always have that plan, or I go look at the menu before I go to the restaurant, and I kind of have an idea of what I'm going to order. And then for me, because I plan, I can enjoy more. I don't have the guilt. I don't feel overwhelmed. I can enjoy the food as well as the company that goes along with that meal too.
I love that. I think that was very well said.
Thanks.
I just have actually just one more question for you, Emily, or one more thing I want to direct towards you, because I know you have a passion for this. What are your tips around how to keep your why top of mind? In your session, you talked about, you know, like why it's so important to know your why and like ways to discover that and figure that out. But what do you say to, like, what are your main tips for you personally or that you work with for how to keep that like front and foremost?
So I'm going to give a little background of why I'm passionate about this. And I think many can probably relate. But it actually happened during COVID and when COVID started. I just had a baby. The world was kind of unknown. Things were going on, and I had so many changes in my life during that time that I didn't realize that I had anxiety until you throw a bunch of change at yourself and you don't know how to manage it. And so I had to take a step back. I started using a different platform for exercising, and on that platform really talked about your why and your purpose and your mantras and having those affirmations in the back of your head because that's what drives us and keeps us disciplined. And I always tell people that I work with, I always tell my family and my friends, I said, there's a reason why our head and our brain are at the top of our body, because for us, in order for us to change anything below our neck, our weight, diabetes, just our comfortability and our confidence, we have to get our mind positive and we have to have this positive mindset. And so having your purpose, having your why, having those mantras and affirmations help with that. And so I actually bought a bracelet during COVID. I got it made and it says, you get to. And it reminds me every single day that I have a choice. I get to do the things I do. I get to get out of bed. I get to go to work and help others. I get to be a mother. I get to exercise and move my body. I get to fuel my body with healthy foods. I don't have to do anything. I shouldn't need to do anything, but I get to do it. And so that's probably my biggest mantra, my biggest why, is because I get to. Other whys are common, right? My family, my kids, my health. Those are very common whys that I hear all the time when I work with people. But it's important that you have a handful of them, because one morning when my alarm goes off at 5 a.m. and I'm going to go work out, sometimes I hate to say it, my family might not be strong enough for me to get out of bed and move my body, right?
Yeah.
My health might not be strong enough for me to get out and not press snooze. So that's why I'm so passionate about it, because for me personally, it's gotten me through some of my toughest times, and it continues just to keep me a positive, uplifting person. So like in the webinar that I did, I encourage everybody to keep a list, whether it's in a journal, a notepad, on their phone, on their bathroom mirror, every time they're brushing their teeth, a list of their whys and purposes so they can wake up every morning and really remember why they got out of bed.
As a bracelet or on your wash band?
As a bracelet. I love it. I never take this bad boy off, and I actually just bought myself a new one because it kind of started fading. So, yep.
Oh, I love that. That's awesome. That's a really unique one too. Wow.
It's not a lot we talk about. We talk a lot about nutrition and exercise and stress, but that positive mindset, I think, really drives all of those other topics.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Well, look in the show notes. There'll be lots of resources in there, including a link to this whole webinar series recording. Thank you, ladies, for all being here and help us recap this and really put, like I said, tie it up with a pretty little bow. And we'll call this one wrapped up.
I'm so glad we got to talk about wellness today, Tasha. And thanks to our audience for joining us. If you have any questions from today's episode or a myth you'd like us to bust, send us an email. For our Wellness Center participants, if you'd like to dive in deeper on anything we discussed today, give us a call or an email and we'll schedule a coaching appointment. Everyone can find us on YouTube and Facebook at Waukesha Employee Health and Wellness. And be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcast from so you never miss an episode. Join us on the first Tuesday of every month for Taco Tuesday. Until then,
bye everyone.